Yeah, welcome to another episode of the SOLIDWORKS podcast. I was at XConf today, and that's where I met Tom Duckering and Pat Downey. They're here with me, and I'm Johannes, developer from Hamburg. And I think we start with Tom. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself?
Of course. My name's Tom Duckering. So I'm a lead consultant based in the London office doing... It pains me to call it DevOps, and so I won't. So I'll call it infrastructure automation. That's the kind of stuff that happens. But it's all around the pipelines and getting infrastructure going, all of that work. So that's the kind of thing I'm doing, currently working on a London-based project. Thrilled to be over here in Hamburg. So,
okay. Pat?
Yeah, well, I'm Pat Downey. I'm also a lead consultant at ThoughtWorks, ThoughtWorks London I'm based out of. I've been there 4 years, since 2011. Again, I do a very similar thing to Tom. So it's I work with development teams in order to try and smooth their path to production, often acting as a liaison between the delivery teams and the operations side of stuff. And, just help out where I can.
Okay.
He does it better, though.
Why does he do it better?
I don't know. I'm just saying that's
just to be nice.
So you had a talk together today which was about securing the pipeline.
Yes. So it's an interesting talk. I think it's been born out of the experiences that we've had. And I guess a bit of context is that Pat and I have been on some of the same projects, not at the same time, over the past probably getting on for 2 years, I reckon. It's been. So we've been on those projects and have seen some similar things that have caused us to kind of think about the fact that the pipeline is an overlooked area for security.
And so just to butt in for a little bit, so the pipeline we're referring to is kind of the bits in between where a developer is working on their workstation and they, they commit to Git and then they do a push into some central repository that then kicks off a whole bunch of mechanics, right? So you've got the build process, you've got the unit testing, integration testing, deployments, all of
so
that
what,
bit.
So what we would call continuous delivery pipeline.
Yeah.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, so continuous delivery pipeline. Right, that's mm-hmm. That's what we mean. So mm-hmm. It's everything kind of in between the developer developing on their workstation and it being deployed into production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had this fear for a while that kind of continuous delivery is really antagonistic to security. And they are things that can't work together. And that's been a worry I've had. But I think more recently I've seen some instances where teams of people who are building these pipelines and people who care and think about security and devs have been working together and have come up with workable solutions that find the right balance. So I found that kind of helpful. And I think that's kind of like the other side of it. There is a way through it. It's not perfect.
So I'm an optimist as well. I think that we can have the best of both worlds, which is, a timely delivery of software to production, while still, satisfying the requirements of this, the corporate security policies or.
Yeah. Maybe going back a little bit, Tom, you said you were worrying that continuous delivery doesn't go together with security.
Yeah.
What were the particular points where you were worrying?
At a few clients I've worked at, you encounter their strong desires for you to kind of segregate duties, and that effectively means that you have to break your pipeline in certain places. And I'm trying to think. If you look into some kind of auditing documentation around how you're to audit systems, they're heavily predicated on systems that don't change very often. And that's completely the opposite of what continuous delivery is suggesting. Continuous delivery is saying, isn't it great when you can deliver small, frequent changes to your system? And accreditation of computer systems for security or kind of audit purposes often says, no, you accredit this system, and then the accreditation only is valid if that system doesn't change, that kind of thing. So there are these things popping up that feel like they're in kind of tension.
Yeah. So it's essentially saying, yes, the continuous delivery pipeline is able to ship software very fast, but it's also very fast if someone wants to attack me. if he like gets to the pipeline, this gets very fast into production.
Yeah, so
right?
I think even before that, before people start looking at the mechanics of the pipeline itself, there's the fears around a developer being able to check in and that going straight. So initially, I think with the terms continuous delivery and continuous deployment, they're often conflated. And when we're talking about continuous delivery, we're not talking about always deploying what we build. We're talking about having the ability to deploy anything that we build.
Mm.
And then the distinction's fine, but it sometimes gets lost in the conversations that we have, particularly when you say it from, you know, just come out and say, oh, yeah, we're going to do this continuous delivery thing.
Yeah, and the continuous deployment would actually mean you deploy everything immediately.
Yeah, so there are some companies that practice continuous deployment, which is where when I get a green build, that'll be deployed into production.
Mm.
And some companies can manage that, and it fits their risk profile, whereas other companies, it doesn't. And often these companies are the bigger, you know, bigger corporate companies that have, you know, probably a lot more at stake.
Mm.
And so they're very wary of either a developer being able to deploy into production or even automating it, because they may not, and this is probably a failure of us sometimes, right, is to not clearly explain the mechanics of what we're trying to do and how it will hopefully fit into their world in a way that will actually give them a lot more value than the way that they're the manual way that they're currently, often currently doing.
Yeah. On you mentioned risk profile. I think that's something that we're not so aware of. And when the risk profile is, I don't quite know how to talk about this, but when they don't have a very big appetite for risk and they're very risk averse, I think we're not so kind of well equipped for dealing with those situations and having kind of answers for, okay, if your risk profile's like this, then we'll tune it like this, and you know, here you kind of you get to feel safer, we've done more here, but it comes at the cost of going slower. I think we're often thinking purely of like, okay, now we're going to go faster and faster and faster, and we're not so kind of good at thinking about the risk profile and its impact, but that's my feeling. But
so how could we do better about understanding the risk profile and mitigating the risk coming out of this profile?
I think one of the things we spoke about this afternoon that Volker was speaking about as well was threat modeling, and in particular he was looking at attack trees. I think that's useful because one thing that we tend to come up against in our more risk-averse, fearful clients is that they don't talk very clearly about risk and they don't talk very clearly about what the mitigations they're proposing are kind of doing. And I think the attack tree stuff helps you make that very clear and kind of brings it all into the open, what we're talking about.
What is this attack tree
stuff? So the attack tree is a means of identifying a series of goals that attackers might have with respect to your system. So the desire to defraud you or to kind of deface your kind of site, perhaps for their own kind of publicity or for some political ends, whatever. So they have these goals, and then you decompose those goals into basically the means by which they would realize that goal. So there are activities, and then those are supported. In order to kind of log onto your system, I need to be on your network and so on. And you decompose it into a kind of tree that helps you see kind of what's going on and identify where to spend your time.
Pat, yeah, and one of the benefits of performing this kind of attack tree or attack tree analysis or threat modeling is the fact that it turns security into tangible and objective things, right? They're bits and pieces, they're topics, they're things, stuff, that you can do something about. So you can consciously choose to mitigate or accept.
So maybe make it too concrete with two examples. What would be an attack you would like to mitigate and what you might say it's not worth the effort?
I guess.
So if you're not worth working the effort, it's probably like worrying about the firmware on your hard disk having been compromised by some, you know, nation state.
Yeah, and like the kind of threats that get the kind of big attention in the kind of tech press are sometimes the ones that, you know, you need to be the NSA or GCHQ to take advantage of, or you need to be kind of China or something like that. And often those are, you know, not at the best place for you to spend your time. Whereas, you know, there are things that are very particular to you or would result in major impact to you as a particular organization that you probably need to focus on. And the attack tree thing is helping you identify that based on, you know, how likely is it to occur? What's the impact of it? How much does it cost us to mitigate? If it's very expensive for us to mitigate, then maybe that would kind of guide our efforts. Pat, I think, was...
So I was trying to allude to a book.
Adam Shostak book.
Adam Shostak, Threat Modeling.
Yeah.
Called Designing for Security.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to go and look that up, that's a great place to start. Bruce Schneier as well has a paper on it online as well that's kind of useful, mm-hmm. that kind of steps you through the mechanics of it.
So how would I apply this threat modeling to a pipeline? So what would be a typical risk of a pipeline be? Or why is the pipeline especially your focus?
So the pipeline, I guess, is our focus because we feel, I feel that it's an area of the delivery chain, mm-hmm. I guess, that isn't often thought about. So sometimes it's, you know, often in clients, right, there's pressure to deliver. And so in order to deliver, we know that we need CI, so we'll set up a Jenkins box or a GoCD machine. And just, in the interests of expediency, we'll just give, anonymous access to these things, and then we'll make sure that the Go agents can SSH onto a machine. And this will just be via a standard account. We may have to give that account pseudo access in order to install a package. All of this is done with anonymous, user access to the Go machine, which means that you lose a lot of traceability and the ability to track back who's made what change and when. And the very nature of build servers is that they're remote execution tools, which means that if you've got an agent that has a private key on it that is used to deploy to production, any build that is executing on that agent will likely have access to the file system that stores the private key. And so if any nefarious commits happened, or changes to the build script, or changes to the build server, the steps that the build server executes, it could leave that private key wide open.
Mm. So you say if there is an unsecured build tool there which has access to live... Essentially, life is not secured.
Yeah. And this is where it comes back to that your build system is a production system, right? It is the production system, right? It's what produces the...
What produces production.
The production system.
Right? Yeah.
And where it gets hard is that systems that we're developing have a lot of dependencies, right? So they have like node dependencies, which you might need Grunt or, Java 1.8 or whatever it is. And so... kind of comes back to the securing the workstation bit that we that we talked about in our talk earlier today. But is that how do you give developers the freedom in order to use the tools that they need to use while still ensuring that the right people are making the right changes, and that only changes are only made via a authorized mechanism. And that's where it gets.
What you essentially saying is teams, developers, infrastructure, whoever does not care enough to secure the build server and the build.
I wouldn't use the word care.
Yeah.
Or isn't aware enough of the security threat.
I think it might be awareness. Yeah. And that's kind of partly what we wanted to achieve today.
And I think, there's awareness, and then there's just the pressures of just the projects that we tend to work on. I mean, to me, this feels very similar to the kind of times when you turn up and you discover that someone's put a prototype into production. You're like, they never intended to, but hey, they didn't have any time to kind of go back and rebuild it. And, similar, we knew we were kind of giving everyone anonymous access to this thing, and we knew that we should probably put a passphrase on these keys and, limit what this user can do. But hey, we had other things to do when the client was pressing us to do this. Or
so now is your 5 minutes to give all the examples why people should be more aware of securing it.
After you, Pat.
Okay, well, I think five examples of where they should be trying to secure it. So I think named accounts to begin with, particularly if you can hook the named accounts into a centralized user management, so something like LDAP or Active Directory, it'd be very useful. The next thing that you need to do with that is to make sure that your credentials aren't being sent over plain text over your corporate network.
Use SSH.
So use SSH, which is the general login one, but also HTTPS.
Yep.
And I think that for the risks that we're trying to mitigate with turning HTTPS on with user accounts or named accounts, like self-signed certificates are fine. So we're in the very initial stages, right? We're not trying to verify trust of the system that we're talking to. We just want to make sure that in transit the credentials aren't exposed on the network.
Have you had any issues in the past with unsecure pipelines?
Not really that I can remember. I think this is where it becomes interesting, right? Is because we see there's risk there. We've been on many clients where there's your networks are open or accounts are open or whatever that is just lying around. And I think it's just because we haven't noticed anyone taking advantage of it, it doesn't mean that it's possible.
I think another factor in us thinking about this is not necessarily that we've had experience of like active attacks on these things.
But the other thing is like oftentimes we wouldn't know even if we did.
Yeah. We'd be blissfully unaware. But there's also, I guess, that in the situations we find ourselves as thought workers, we're often trying to make a defence that continuous delivery is not an insecure approach and that it can be kind of done in a way that is secure. And I think this is just to kind of raise the game of those who are kind of currently perhaps naively implementing it with no malicious intent. But we want to kind of just say, hey, you need to think about these things and hopefully raise our own, kind of game as well and try and do it better. I don't claim to be kind of wiser than white in this. I've kind of made some silly decisions in the past on this.
Are you willing to share some of them?
Like being okay with like seeing people using shared accounts and kind of just lazily setting up kind of Git servers that are not as kind of locked down as they really ought to be, turning a blind eye to the fact that the build servers, people can log on to them and have root access on them and have a habit of fixing things. And that's I guess looking back and trying to self-examine, that's really done in the kind of the pressure of, hey, we need to get this thing fixed. The whole team is waiting. The build's broken because this tool wasn't there and we were expecting it. And trying to, fine, log on, fix it, get yourselves going. And just that's kind of a smell. It's not a great behavior. And as Pat's mentioning, the kind of the notion that your build systems are production and that they're wide open to anyone kind of messing around with them is not a great thing. So. Yeah, I would.
What's the trouble with shared accounts?
It's the inability to tie things back to a particular person. It's the property of being able to say, I know that kind of Dave made this check-in or this change, or I saw that he logged on to this machine and I saw him sudo this command on this date in the audit logs, and I saw kind of Sarah log on the day after and she did this thing, and we'd never expect that to happen. With a shared account, you just can't tell who did it.
Yeah. And you don't know if it's an attacker. And
yeah.
Well, exactly, right? So you don't know if the developer's workstation has been compromised or whether... so it's just without the named accounts, it's hard to track it back to a particular individual, right? And that's not saying that an individual account, right, which is kind of slightly different to the individual themselves.
Yeah, because the account might still be stolen, but then you at least know which account is stolen. Yeah.
Yes.
And when and what machine.
I think the thing that's kind of we're kind of talking around at the moment is this difference between being able to stop bad things and but being able to see when bad things have happened. And that's a useful kind of thing to kind of differentiate between. So you can't stop people checking in code. There's they have to check in good code. They have to check in code that kind of satisfies
that's
kind of
their
stories.
Work, right?
Yeah, that's their job. And so how on earth do you deal with, like, do you, I mean, you can't analyze their code before it gets checked in and applied to the repo. So without manual effort, which is another question. So what do? You say, okay, maybe after the event, they've checked something in, but we can go and see who did it and from which machine and those kind of things. I kind of cheekily describe this auditing approach as the NSA approach. It's impractical to stop people living their lives because they might do something bad. It's impractical to stop developers doing their jobs in case they might do something bad or their machine might be compromised. And so we let them do it, but we gather all kinds of logs and audit data about what's going on such that we can kind of pore over those afterwards or kind of watch them for bad things or bad patterns and things like that.
And I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, right, are probably not too much of a concern for a load of different companies.
Mm.
But I think that there's some, you know, there's some industries and some companies within, you know, bigger industries where regulation and audit and compliance are a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Where being able to think about this stuff and being aware of what a delivery pipeline looks like, but also how you can kind of secure it. And by secure, it's not obviously a zero or one thing. It's a risk-based approach that this is what we want to protect against. And this is how we can do it while still having a timely release to production and not getting in the way of, you know, delivering business value in a much more regulated environment. Because, I mean, the other benefit of, you know, continuous delivery, right? We talk about audit,
yeah,
as in, you know, you've got a Git commit that's come from somewhere. You know, so-and-so changed the build configuration on this date versus someone logged into this machine and ran sudo at 3 a.m. There's a whole bunch of this stuff that is still very useful. Right, and it's very useful to auditors, and if you can show auditors that you've got this information, then, you know, that's a... I don't know. Me not being a compliance officer, I would like that.
But. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I compare it... Some of the conversations I've had with some of our kind of clients when they're talking about the things they do to satisfy audit kind of requirements are, oh, we write it all down in a spreadsheet, and you think, goodness, I mean, I could write anything in that spreadsheet. I could write, I've done the right thing and go and do the wrong thing. And whereas, you know, continuous delivery pipelines certainly seem to offer a much stronger approach to that audit capability than lots
of
the approaches.
So there is this initial work of, like, making it secure because it is a way to get bad stuff into production.
But I think it's just a way of being aware about how stuff actually gets into production. And stuff can get into production in a number of different ways, like in the continuous delivery way, right? It's automated, so... it's simple. Someone pushes a button, and then a bunch of different steps will execute along the way in order to ship the artifacts around and restart services and that. Versus a more traditional approach, which would be, I need to fill out this form. I need to give this form to this person who needs to follow some instructions over here, who needs to open six terminal windows and execute the same command on six different machines in order to install my
and make no mistake
my bits and pieces, and make no mistake and update some configuration files, and make no mistake doing it. Like the traceability there is a bit of paper that has no actual relation to what actually happened, whereas via the, you know, the continuous delivery route or the automated route, right, continuous delivery or whatever you want to call it, with the correct amount of logging, you will know everything that actually happened. In fact, that this is actually what happened, not, you know, I'm following this checklist and I missed a step. Or didn't do a step, or did a step wrong, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
that's.
I mean, one of the things we find. It's just a lot of this process, and yeah, we have to be careful and gentle about the way we kind of call it out. But it's a lot of it is theatrical, and it doesn't offer the protection that people think it really does. And you know, we want to be able to offer a kind of, hey, we've got something better, and not only is it better in terms of it's more, you know, it offers you greater reliability or greater auditability or whatever we're talking about. But it actually doesn't kind of compromise the speed with which we can work as well. And I guess ultimately there's always going to be these tensions, but I certainly think we can move to a better place than we are in various instances. But yeah.
Okay. I think we could close this episode with the final words. If you have any last words you would like to share.
I guess I would, just recalling what we were speaking about today in our talk and the way we concluded it, was really to say, look, you can come up with all these technical ways of auditing check-ins and things like that, but ultimately there's a culture that supports you discovering these things and being able to kind of talk cogently and sensibly about security concerns and talk about their solutions and how you approach that. And it really stands upon a collaborative culture where people who understand the tools and people who understand the security concerns can talk honestly about what's going on and what the risks really are. And I think we need to encourage those kind of cultures and that kind of stuff. It's in that environment that we discover the right ways and the better ways of doing things. I mean, I don't know about Pat, but I certainly can't profess to saying, hey, we've got all the answers. Here's how you build a secure pipeline. It's this, this, and this. Here's the tools you need to kind of install and use these ones and configure it this way. There are certainly some bits of it that we can offer some advice on, but there's some of it is still to be discovered and still to be kind of invented and worked out. And I think it's that culture that I talk about. That's the ground on which these things get discovered, I think.
Mm-hmm. I got not really much more to add.
Yeah. Okay. Then thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time. Bye.
Okay.